Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye and WisPolitics look at this week in the Capitol in politics. But WisEye was there. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Malin Mitchell has a plan. Between 6th grade and 12th grade, if you work community service, you'd get 2 years of free UW tuition. And Mayor Barrett says by 2021, Foxconn tax incentives will be greater than all state aid to the city of Milwaukee. Kelda Roy says it's a great year to be a female Democratic candidate. And a parent goes to the Blue Ribbon Commission on School Funding in Tomahawk and talks about the problems in rural schools. Wish I was there.
But we're going to have a plan where we actually have from 6th grade to 12th grade, you work so many hours in your community, giving back to your community. And once you get to that threshold of so many hours, you will have two years of free tuition at a UW school. And what that will provide is that 6th grader will then get a sense of community. They will have actually earned their right to go to school, actually earned and feel good about working on behalf of their community. They'll be part of the community, and they've paid it forward, so to speak.
The fact is, in 3 years, Foxconn is going to be receiving more money from state government than the city of Milwaukee. Foxconn, one company, is going to receive more money than the entire city of Milwaukee. And we generate sales tax, income tax, gas tax that goes to the state. And yet we cannot get a recognition from the state, either in terms of helping us in shared revenue, or God forbid, we're not even getting any money. Give us the authority to go to our own residents and ask them whether they would rather pay a sales tax.
This is this tiny group of people who already made it through all the loops and hoops of stigma, of healthcare coverage, of gathering courage to get to the doctor's office and talk about that. If this person with opioid addiction does not receive treatment when they are ready for it, when they really need it, what will they do? Well, they will not go home and contemplate that. They will go home and probably use.
A day or two delay or longer or another barrier placed in front of them makes it less likely that they're actually going to get in into some form of treatment. That is where we have one of the executive orders is to move forward with a what it would be similar to a bed tracker model. So rather than sending somebody home with a list of phone numbers to call and find it themselves, we're actually able to coordinate the with the need.
Actually, for the first time, my pollster says it's an advantage to be a woman on the ballot. A Democratic woman versus a Republican man gives us the largest generic ballot split that we have, which is shocking.
Do I feel slighted by what's going on for the students up here? Yes, I do. And because I do not think that they're being taken care of. Our students up here do not have the broadband access that your students have south of 64. So when you look at options and things changing, you can't ask a family with a medium income of $34,000 to pay $1,200 a year so their son or daughter can do homework.
As we look at this thing, I think the answer is, what responsibility does the state have dealing with property taxes across the state? It's the revenue caps that are really causing schools issues, and when you're a declining enrollment district, we assume the cost per student stays the same, but in essence it really goes up.
Right.
When you're an increasing enrollment district, the cost per student doesn't stay the same, it really goes down. And we need to figure out how to deal with it.
We don't normally lead this show when a company announces economic development contracts.
Yeah.
But in this case, Foxconn announces dozens of contracts totaling $100 million, only one of which went to an Illinois firm in Rockford. And then they spread around the contracts this week, announcing them. And we have a graphic showing just some of the companies that are getting this. Now, the reason, JR, that I'm leading the show with this is that this allowed Governor Walker to then go to Black River Falls and Racine and pose with some of these companies that is sharing in the initial Foxconn contracts. So there's a huge political dimension to this, right?
This is what we've been talking about for months, that Walker has to sell this as not being just about southeastern Wisconsin, but the entire state. The more dots you can put in that map, the better it is for that argument, right? The more concentrated they are, the worse it is. But if you look at that map, I don't see anything in La Crosse or Eau Claire or Superior or places in North Wisconsin, so they may come. But the more you can show that it's not just Racine County, the easier to make the argument of there's a benefit for all of you because all of you are paying for these incentives.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, let's draw the Highway 10 line, and there doesn't seem to be many contracts there. Southwest Wisconsin, represented by Republican Senator Mark Lyne, nothing there. But I just looked up some of the headlines in local newspapers after these contracts were announced. The Eau Claire Leader Telegram, Foxconn taps Black River Falls Company, Hoffman Construction, Racine Journal Times, Case gets Foxconn contract, mm-hmm. Fond du Lac Reporter, and the La Crosse Tribune also talked about Black River Falls. So the governor is maximizing the PR here.
Trying to, because this is an issue for him right now that is not a winner with voters. He's got to try to turn it around before November.
Right. Okay. And then yesterday, Foxconn announces Smart City, Smart Future, $1 million in competition. I'm reading now from the Racine Journal Times story, look for innovative ways to harness technology, quality of life, working environments, streetscapes, transportation. What's the fallout from this?
To show that there is more going on than just a factory, that they're investing in Wisconsin, that there's a benefit in Wisconsin for the tax dollars we're putting into this project done. It's all about showing not just about Racine County.
And did the company break ground this week?
I believe so.
Okay. So big win for the governor, economic development?
It's a good arrow in the quiver to make the argument of it's not just about this. And that's part of the problem is we saw in the Marquette poll that it was more popular right around where it was being done and much, much less popular farther out you went. So this is part of trying to counter that perception right now.
Now that the contracts are out, we'll see what Charles Franklin reports in terms of mm-hmm. that Foxconn deal's popularity. Okay, excuse my allergy coughing here. Let's go to the staff complaint that led to the discipline against Lena Taylor. Mm-hmm. Let's walk through the recommendations of both Jeff Rank, the chief clerk of the Senate, and the human resources manager. Number one, they found that Senator Taylor, Democrat of Milwaukee, veteran Democrat of Milwaukee, violated Senate policy on Family Medical Leave Act, violated Senate policy against bullying staff members, and they ordered her to begin communication management and anti-bullying training within 3 months. She served in the Senate since 2004. She won her fourth term in 2016. She's been on finance for a while, and we'll hear from her in just a minute, but I want to ask you about one thing that she referred to in her statement, a one-year, no-work, no-show contract. I don't understand that.
We don't either because the complaint, the full settlement wasn't in this overview. All we got was the overview of the complaint was filed by a staffer who said she was retaliated against for several reasons, including not working on Lena's campaign in 2016.
Yes.
Several of those complaints were found.
In 2016 was important because she was challenged by
Mandela Barnes in the Democratic primary.
Yeah, excuse me.
Several of the provisions were found to be unfounded, but they did find that there was evidence of her bullying staffers and retaliating against the staffer filed a complaint over the Family Medical taking leave under the Family Medical Leave Act. So there's that piece of it. When talking to people this week, you know, Lena has been somebody who's been a very passionate person on joint finance, at times, though, not the same page as everybody else.
Yeah.
There was this incident at Milwaukee Bank, which was not really a good look for her. This was the last straw, essentially. The idea that I've gotten from people is that Jennifer Schilling had to act because now you're talking about bullying staffers. We've seen the stories about the turnover, the massive turnover in her office, which is unusual. That suggests, and if you talk to people before, they will tell you that she's a very difficult person to work for. This gives credence to that. You have to do something if you're Jennifer Schilling if you're seeing this kind of stuff come out.
But you and I remember covering joint finance in the 1990s when there were a number of Milwaukee representatives, a number of Milwaukee legis on the joint finance committee. Now she is the only one of
which
the
is
16.
I'm sure that LaTanya Johnson has
past
a lot
of tense. She had been.
Yes. LaTanya Johnson has a lot of talents that made her a worthy person to be on finance. But that she's from Milwaukee probably played in her favor because you don't want to leave that that piece of the Democratic pie unrepresented on the committee. Now, let's be honest. Joint Finance is basically done for the year. I mean, they may do some 1310 hearings, things like that, but there's no real heavy lifting for the committee from now until next year. You look forward to next year, though, that's when it gets a little dicey. I mean, if Lena stayed on the committee with all this stuff going on,
yeah,
and if, big
if,
Democrats won the majority in November, then what do you do?
She would have a stake as a member. She was a former co-chair, even though it was an interim period of finance after the recall elections flipped the Senate for the Democrats, but only for a few months, because then November of 2012, the Republicans took it back. Okay, let's go now to a press conference that Senator Taylor had in Milwaukee. It's pretty amazing. Let's listen to the senator.
The complaint, as I've said before, was a disgruntled employee. I can't say enough that I think the average person believes that if you want to get paid, you need to show up to get paid. And if that means that you have to come to Madison, you have to come to Madison. I will tell you that I think that this disgruntled employee was not only unwilling in some situations, but unable to do the job and to meet the requirements of the position. I think the real question is, why has this been handled in this way? And I am saddened by my friend and majority leader that I was the deciding vote for her to be the leader, not once but twice, and even against my own Milwaukee delegation representative. I feel that the way that this has been handled is not appropriate. I believe if a process does not follow the rules, that a process is not fair, that we should be concerned, especially as Democrats who stand for fairness and justice. Listen, Clarence Thomas is no Thurgood Marshall, LaTanya Johnson is no Lena Taylor. But I will tell you that I've called my colleague and I've congratulated her. And I will tell you this, I will be rolling up my sleeves to help anyone, because I will continue to fight for Milwaukee and represent Milwaukee and share my skills and my talents at the table the way that I always have. But this is what I want to say more than anything. I'm saddened of the rush to judgment, the racism that exists in this community, if I could be very candid, in the media as well as in MPD. So I came and I held this press conference today because I need to say, even amidst the political lynching that one is attempting to do, that I started to bring my name badge in, I'm still Senator Taylor. I still represent the 4th District. I still will be fighting for women. I still will be fighting for the people in my community. I still will be standing up against discrimination and for minorities in this state. And yes, yes, I will still be standing up for me and fighting back against all the things that are wrong in this state, from the disparities to the discrimination that we receive to the really very candidly biased coverage that happens.
Yes. Wow, what a press conference. Political lynching, JR?
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from?
Very loaded language. Lena is being defiant in this news conference that she did nothing wrong that would warrant being pulled off the Joint Finance Committee. That opinion is not shared with people I talked to in the Capitol this week. The question kind of for Taylor going forward is, what's this mean for her future? I mean, I've heard Lena's name floated from mayor of Milwaukee, judge.
She ran for county exec.
Ran for county exec, you know, that she will run for something else someday. Well, how does this play? We know from 2016, the constituents in her district like her a lot because she beat back a primary challenge from Mandela Barnes easily. But winning a Democratic primary for your seat, it's much different than winning a citywide or a statewide or a countywide office.
Yeah.
So this may not be something very good for her in the future. We just have to see how it plays out.
Why this backhand of Senator Johnson? Clarence Thomas is no Thurgood Marshall, and LaTanya Johnson is no Lena Taylor. What, even though she called to congratulate Senator Johnson, why that backhand?
Lena insists you have to include the context in there about, you know, in her words, replacing one black girl on committee with another black girl to make it okay. I mean, let's be honest, there's a race involved in this issue. She said nice things about LaTanya, but I think her point is that she's got more experienced. She's been there longer. She is a passionate advocate on these issues that affect Milwaukee. That seems to be the context of it. But, yeah, it came off as somebody who's kind of diminishing the person replacing
her. She also said it was her vote that elected Jennifer Schilling, leader of Senate Democrats. And let's just read Senator Schilling's quote. No matter the workplace, we need to protect an employee's right to bring forward concerns and ensure everyone is able to work in a safe, productive, and welcoming environment. Schilling pulled her, not Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, right?
Nope, it's a request for hearing. Fitzgerald had to do the paperwork, essentially. That claim about that she was a deciding vote for Schilling is interesting. Schilling's people push back and say that's not how it happened. But it does raise the question because, you know, Lena Taylor is going to be in that caucus for at least the next couple of years because her term goes to unless she leaves for something else.
Right.
What role will Lena play in that caucus for the next at least 2 years? Will she be a thorn in the side of Jennifer Schilling? Will she be a team player? Or will she say, well, you guys dumped me, so I'm now going to get my pound of flesh back? That's something to watch. It's how she plays with fellow Democrats the next couple of years.
Especially if, as you said, it's a big if Democrats capture the Senate on November 6th.
If it's 17-16, she has a lot of influence. At that kind of majority, anybody in the caucus has a lot of influence. And so it's something to watch.
Yeah. A week ago, JR, we ended Rewind by you saying that a Department of Justice advisory had thrown chaos into industrial hemp and CBD. And yesterday, they resolved that after a meeting with Senator Teston and the Assembly co-sponsor and Ag and DOJ, all is better. I mean, a week ago, Schimmel threw the flag, and now he picks up the flag.
Well, there's a lot of pushback. I mean, that's one thing. The authors were kind of caught off guard, from what I can tell, that this came out because they are the impression, from what I can tell, talking to DOJ in the process, that all good to go.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, this comes out. They were caught off guard and wondered where they were getting that interpretation. Brad Schimmel had a political issue on his hands because this is a popular bill. Now he's saying no. He's the one saying you can't do this. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to try to interpret state law or whatnot and say what's good or bad, who's right or wrong. But politically, it's not the best thing for Brad Schimmel to be the one in the way of the ag community getting a chance to harvest hemp.
The Farm Bureau Federation was really angry with that.
They were not very thrilled, I'd say that.
Yeah. And you reported the new number in your newsletter today, 368 applications to grow, process industrial hemp, including CBD oil. So you have different products with hemp. You can make clothing, you can make rope. Oh yeah, and CBD oil, which is now for sale in Wisconsin healthcare stores, but it comes from out of state. So the issue was, can our processors process and sell CBD oil? And DOJ says hemp grown by any licensee, including those licensed in Wisconsin, is now legal. So Schimmel did... backed up the train.
Reversal, yeah. I forget for the ag community. We're talking about there are constant pressures about prices in the ag community. We've got constant pressures about finding people to work on the farms, especially in the environment we're in right now with immigration. You take this away, too, that would have been like kind of another whammy for them that would not sit well.
Yeah, and the Schimmel statement, CBD is helpful for certain Wisconsinites, and the legislature has made a policy decision to allow those individuals to have access to CBD, but we should make sure our consumers are getting what they expect. A week ago, Schimmel told me some people taking CBD are having health problems with it, and that was one of his concerns, but okay, we move on. Had a chance this week to interview all five candidates in the 42nd Assembly District. We can talk about that, but first, let's listen to how I asked the four Republicans. I had this question: how would you pay for the state's transportation highway futures? Let's listen to the four GOP answers.
The impasse in the Capitol over how to pay for road funding.
We've got to do something.
And you would do what to solve that
what
problem?
What I would want to do is go back to square one with our state budget. I haven't seen the whole budget. I don't know what's in it. There's got to be room to find enough money for our roads because they are atrocious. I mean, especially in our rural districts. The roads are terrible. I think we need paved roads. And I think we need to go back and look at our budget and see where we're spending our money in the state.
Are you saying take money from the general fund, the operating fund?
Well, I think we need to look at everything.
Including raising the gas tax, the registration fee, and tolling, the T word?
Oh, I don't want to do any of those things, really, unless I look at it and say, okay, look, we really don't have any other place to get the money from.
I'm a user fee kind of guy. So I drive my vehicle around. I know that those roads are important not only to me personally, but also from a business standpoint and transportation overall. So I'd be open to gas tax increase. Probably that over a raise in licensing, but mm-hmm. I'm open to both options. But clearly we have to get caught up, and we're going to need some more revenue for that.
Some leaders have expressed an interest in tolling. Have you been asked about tolling? Do you have a position on it?
I'm not in favor of it at this time.
I think we're probably going to have to find some types of new revenue. Exactly how we do that, or probably, in my opinion, more reallocation of where the money's going.
Okay.
If you look at some of the types of tolling, I think that maybe outside states, maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to figure out some way to not have to have the state residents pay, but the traffic coming across the borders, because I'm sure a lot of them don't buy their gasoline here.
Maintaining the roads, obviously, is going to be one of my top priorities, and finding funding for the transportation budget is going to be difficult. I understand that there's different options. One would be raising the gas tax. I'm opposed to that. I'm opposed to raising registration fees.
You're opposed to the $75 fee increase?
I am opposed to that. Over the years, I've seen how Wisconsin drivers have been paying into the Illinois tollway year after year for decades, and so Wisconsin citizens have been funding road repairs on Illinois roads for decades, and I think it's not fair. I think it's time for Illinois to start paying for Wisconsin roads. I'd like to see a series of tolls at the Wisconsin-Illinois border on vehicles entering Wisconsin with out-of-state plates. I proposed this idea a couple years ago, and there is some precedent for this. A couple other states, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, they have discounts for in-state drivers. I'd like to see 100% discount for Wisconsin drivers and have a tollway just at the border for vehicles entering Wisconsin with out-of-state plates, and only at the Illinois border. I think that we could start to recoup some of the money that Wisconsin drivers have been paying for the Illinois roads. We could start having them contribute for our roads.
Now, two of those candidates, Mr. Zimmerman, who doesn't live in the district, and Darren Schroeder say maybe we should find a way to toll out all out-of-state residents, which I just find intriguing, and there might be a little due process problem with that legally. But you reported that GOP leaders in Madison made it clear that they want Mr. Plummer, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh, just look at his finance report. I mean, he's getting donations from other city members of the assembly. It's clear that they want him to get through. They think he's the strongest candidate. They recruited him to run. He owns a chain of karate schools, I believe, former salesman.
Yeah.
So they view him as the one. You know, Spencer Zimmerman has run for I don't know how many seats now.
Four or five.
None of them where he lives, by the way. He ran for the special election for the assembly seat in West Bend last December, and he lives in Janesville.
Gundrum, yeah.
So, you know, there's that going against him. But, yeah, Plummer's, I think, the one they're expecting to get through in that primary.
Well, J.R., I went a little wonk this week, and I looked up who's represented Columbia County going back to the 1960s, and Keith Ripp, Doc Hines, Ben Bransel, in the 1970s, Tommy George Thompson, and Kenyon Keyes, Robert Thompson, and they've all been Republicans. Is this winnable for Democrats?
Well, it depends on what gauge you're looking at. The state Supreme Court race, very close, but Rebecca Dallet took
Columbia.
It by, you know, very close, the district, very close race. But was she a true partisan measure of Democrat versus Republican? Probably not. If the Dem enthusiasm holds that we've been seeing, I mean, you know, the 10th Senate district was a 17-point Donald Trump win, and you have Patty Schottner win by 10 points. So what is the cutoff of what's competitive in this environment? I don't know.
Yeah.
The enthusiasm gap persists. We saw a CNN poll this week that had the generic ballot gap closing for Congress between Republicans and Democrats. Is that a trend, or is that like a one-time blip? Who knows? But in this environment that we've seen in Wisconsin, at least, Democrats have been able to win seats that, you know, by margins you wouldn't normally see. So they have a shot? Sure.
Right.
I've already seen Angrose Lloyd up on TV with an ad up talking about clean water. So she has a clear path to the nomination, and she's already running, you know, look at that, with an eye toward that June election.
And just a note, at wisi.org, you can see my interviews with all four Republican candidates and the Democrat, Angrose Lloyd, who JR just mentioned, and the independent Gene Rubenstein. And so we'll be talking about that primary and that in Senate District 1 a week from today. Rewind. Okay, I want to preview the Republican convention tomorrow in Milwaukee. Here are my three highlights. I'd be interested in your take. The endorsement vote on Leah Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson.
And Governor Walker says, we have a story, let's tell it. And the goodbye message of Paul Ryan. So what else are you looking for?
Those are pretty good ones. I think the abortion was the thing that we're watching the closest, because for Vukmir, she's raised the expectation she's going to win that endorsement vote. So if she doesn't, that would be a very serious blow to her campaign. If she does, how does she parlay that into something besides just having, you know, a nice vote at a convention of delegates? Can she raise more money off of it? Can she build a bigger campaign? Can she tap into the infrastructure of the state GOP and use that to her advantage? Because Kevin Nicholson so far has had the support of outside groups, at least much more support. I mean, we have seen one super PAC for Leah. But nationally, he's got more of a profile. He's going to raise more money. He's got more money in the bank. Not that much more, but more money in the bank. She's got to find a way to close that gap. Could this endorsement be enough? Now, if he holds her below 60% in that vote, that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
So that's something to watch. Walker continues trying to sell the message, you know, of Republican, you know, the successes. So we'll be watching for that.
We have a story to tell. Let's tell it.
Yeah. So here's one of the kickoffs toward that sprint to November.
What do you expect Paul Ryan to say in his goodbye message to the people that have kept him in office for 20 years?
His folks have been talking about how he's going to keep the pedal down to the finish line, that he's not letting up, he's not going out to pasture early. Saw a story this week out of Politico that about he went out to see Sheldon Adelson, and he
Las
didn't
Vegas?
Personally get the pledge, but the party got a pledge for $30 million for one of the super PACs to spend money on campaigns.
In addition to the $54 million that Ryan raised last year?
So he is going, you know, pedal down on raising money. I'm sure the message is going to be to finish strong.
Is Wisconsin going to do its straw poll this year?
No straw poll, because the endorsement votes will be blogging wall-to-wall coverage of the convention tomorrow morning.
Wall-to-wall coverage. In addition, Wisconsin I will have live coverage of the convention. And I've scheduled interviews with Senator Johnson, members of the congressional delegation, hopefully Speaker Voss, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, also invited Senator Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson. So you can watch those interviews next week. And off to Milwaukee.
Tonight I will be off to Milwaukee, yes.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 11.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.